at this workshop. I hope you all feel like you've made progress. But guaranteed, there's a few of you in this room who feel like this experience has been really hard. I feel like I'm really bad at this. Maybe I should just quit. And if that's you, I want to encourage you that that feeling might actually be progress. Let me explain. As we make progress as Bible teachers, we are all moving within a pyramid of competency. And at the bottom of the pyramid, we have teachers who are unconsciously incompetent. Yep. There are teachers who simply don't know what they don't know. And sisters, I'm down here sometimes. Sometimes I have blind spots in my work, and I need someone to point them out to me. So we can all be down here at points. It's uncomfortable to have those blind spots pointed out sometimes. But after the first small group, you may have moved from being unconsciously competent to consciously incompetent. And that is actually progress, because when we are consciously incompetent, we know our weaknesses. We know what we need to work on, and we have a sense of, we're like, all right, I'm gonna work on this, I'm gonna make progress. And when we do that, then we move up to being consciously competent. That's teachers who know what they're doing and they know why they're doing it. That's where we hope and strive to be. Occasionally, we might drift up to being unconsciously competent. We actually don't want to be up in the tip top of the pyramid, because when we're unconsciously competent, we do something well intuitively, but we don't know how we did it, we're not quite sure why we did it, and that's not where we want to live. If we don't know why we did something well, then we might not be able to repeat it, we certainly won't be able to make more progress, and we certainly won't be able to help anyone else make progress, because we won't be able to show them how we did the good thing that we did. So if we find ourselves up there, we want to come back down to being consciously competent. Everything on this pyramid, or everything at this workshop, is driving us towards that layer of the pyramid. And sisters, we're not called to perfection overnight, we're called to progress over a lifetime. Like, I move all throughout this pyramid and seek feedback in spaces like this to help drive me towards that conscious competence. We practice and make progress by coming back to the fundamentals of our craft regularly, and we need each other to do it. So whether this workshop has been absolutely mind-blowing for you, or whether you've dusted off some tools already in your toolbox, I hope you'll come back next year to training camp, because we make progress together. All right, so we are going to review what we've done this weekend one last time. So, what have we done? Where do we start, guys? We start with the text. And where are we trying to get to eventually? Yeah, us now. But we don't want to do this. Why? It's blind contextualism, and we do wonky things with the text when we do that. So instead, where do we want to get first? We want to get to them then. And what are the tools that we use, the principles that we use along this leg of exegesis? Yeah, I heard them all at once. Good job. We have melodic line, we have structure, and we have context. And we need melodic line to help us understand what about the book? Of the whole book. We want to hear the melody of the whole book. We want to hear the message of the whole book to help us teach each text more faithfully. For structure, what are we looking for? The structure reveals the emphasis. That one is all about finding the author's emphasis. And then context. Why do we need context? Because it informs the meaning of the text. Absolutely. All right, so once we've done all of our exegesis work and we've arrived at what the author was saying to them, then we take a turn. And what are we coming for? Yeah, we're doing all of that work of setting our text in the grand redemptive story of the whole Bible in a way that points us to Jesus Christ. And we must find legitimate connections from our text to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And finally, we're ready to make the turn to us now. And that's what we get to do in this session, which is super fun. We are going to work on persuasion. Now, persuasion involves many parts. Let's see if you guys can know what I'm trying to draw here. Anyone? Yay! It's a bullseye. And this is also part of the drawing. An arrow. Great. So this drawing is going to help us think about all the elements of persuasion. We're going to label a bunch of things on this, and then we're going to focus our time on one of them, which is arrangement. So the whole target itself, or bullseye itself, is your audience. If you're going to persuade someone of something, you have to know who they are. Who are you teaching? What are their lives like? Where are they at in their faith journey? We have to know what we're aiming at in order to hit it. The arrowhead is our argument. The arrowhead is our argument, and the very point of the arrowhead is our main point. That's significant because your main point doesn't have to say everything. Your main point only needs to say the most important thing, and then your argument is actually broader than that, and it pushes towards the point, okay? Your main point, I think Cindy told us this before, we suggest 13 words or less, arranged in a memorable way. There's science behind that. There's a reason why phone numbers at least used to be 7 digits so that we could all remember them. You can only remember 7 unrelated items. At least most people's brains can only do that. When the words are related, like they are in a sentence, you get a few more words. But really, if you push beyond 13, people aren't going to remember it. And if you contort the boundaries of English to get it into 13, they're still probably not going to remember it. So, concise, memorable. The shaft of the arrow is your arrangement. That's your teaching outline and your title, which includes, we should label these, that includes number 7 on the worksheet, and your argument is number 5. Okay, and then the feathers are your adornments. So adornments are illustrations, quotations, just also beautiful language. Beautiful and interesting language. That's all adornments. Now, notice everything is driving towards the main point. All of your words in your talk or in your teaching, if you're interactive, this still can work for you. Everything is driving towards the main point. You have to have a reason for everything you say in your talk. So there's no room for, oh, and by the way, this doesn't really relate, but this interesting thing I found. All you're doing is distracting from the main thing the text is trying to do. We don't want to distract from the main thing the text is trying to do. Like, we want to be faithful to the point. So this requires so much discipline to just get rid of those things that you love but that don't support the main point. Like, I cut things that break my heart every time. Okay, one more thing needs to be on here, and that is, I'm just going to kind of add some squiggly lines here. Application. Application is the arrow making contact with the audience. It's the main point making contact with the lives of your audience. And today we're going to focus on arrangement. We all arrange our materials when we teach. Whether we're conscious of it or not, we do. Because we start somehow, we say some stuff, and then we end. We're arranging our materials. Whether we're giving a talk or teaching interactively, we do this. The question is, are we doing it well? Are we doing it intentionally? Are we being both faithful to the text and clear? Our number one priority is faithful to the text. Our second priority, clarity. Clarity, clarity, clarity. We need to be clear. And third, are we being persuasive? Are we moving people towards the point of the text? So here's, to help us do that, here's our principle statement. The persuasive teacher intentionally arranges her materials to make her argument. Now we'll write it together. The persuasive teacher intentionally arranges her materials to make her argument. And that is specific to arrangement. We can see this happening in the book of Deuteronomy. The book of Deuteronomy is made up of a series of sermons by Moses, and we can see him doing it in his sermons. So let's flip to Deuteronomy 1. And let's read out loud Deuteronomy 1:5. Well, let's just read verse 5. Beyond the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Moses undertook to explain this law, saying, what's Moses doing? He's explaining. What's he explaining? He's explaining the law. And if you go on to leaf through, his first sermon is most of chapters 1 through chapter 4. If you've leafed through, you'll see that he's specifically expositing the part of the law, the Pentateuch, that are the narratives about the wilderness wanderings. So he's thinking about Exodus and Numbers, and he arranges his sermon materials to make an argument. He's got two big sections. You could break it down more than that, but 1 to 3, he's looking back at the history of Israel and making and proving to the people that God wants his people to take the land. And then in chapter 4, he turns to his conclusion and his application, be faithful and take possession of the land. Let me show you real quick. So flip back to 1 if you flipped forward and look at 1:8. Just a few verses in, he lands and tells everyone his main point. See, I have set the land before you. Go in and take possession of the land. If you look down at 21, see, the Lord your God has set the land before you. Go up, take possession. Verse 26, yet you would not go up, but rebelled. If you keep going through chapters 1 to 3, you will see this refrain over and over again. God has promised the land. Go take possession of it. God has promised the land. Go take possession of it. And he arranges his materials. Chapter 1, your grandfathers were unfaithful, so they didn't take the land. Chapter 2, God will give the land he promised and no more. Chapter 3, God has given early success in taking the land. Like, he's really making this point about go take the land. And then, flip to chapter 4, look at verse 1. He turns specifically to his current audience, and he really drives that point home in application. He's going to tell them to be faithful and take the land. And now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the rules that I am teaching you, and do them that you may live, and go in and take possession of the land that the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. Yeah. Moses hits this point at least 10 times in these 4 chapters. He is unpacking these historical narratives to make this point. Follow God and take possession of the land. If you read the whole sermon later, you can kind of see that repetition, but everything he includes is driving towards that main point, and he repeats his main point over and over again. We can observe sermons elsewhere in Scripture doing this. You could see it if you study the sermons of Acts or look at the sermon-like sections of the book of Hebrews. So there's a biblical case to be made for this sort of work, to arrange our materials carefully to make the point of a text. And to help us do that in ways that persuade modern audiences, because Moses's methods might not work as well for our audiences today, we're gonna draw on some just generally helpful principles of speech. Okay? Any questions at this point? Okay, onward. So, components. What are the basic parts of every exposition?
Introduction.
Yeah. We have an introduction. We start. What else? A hook. Okay. Good. I'm going to make that a subpoint under intro, but I like it. What are the big parts? What's the big part that comes after the introduction?
The body.
The body. Yeah. And what comes last?
Conclusion.
Conclusion. Good. So what's our purpose in the intro? What's a hook? Help us out. Yeah, it gets people in. They want to listen. Your hook, and that's exactly the word I wanted to use, helps us capture attention. So we want to gain attention. And it is not enough to merely gain attention. It isn't. Because this will happen. You'll tell a really interesting story and everyone will be listening, and then you'll say, now let's open our Bibles, and they'll all tune out. Not all of them, but you'll lose some people that way. So you also need to create a need to listen. I attempted to do this in my exposition yesterday by not only having those playful, overwhelming odds, but inviting you guys to picture your own and then asking, how do you respond to them? How do we respond to our overwhelming odds? How we respond is going to reveal our hearts. How do we respond? So my hope was that you would be drawn in to wonder, how do I respond? Like, I want to go along with this. So that was my attempt to create a need to listen. So hook, what else do we do in our intros? Yeah, you preview what you're going to talk about. So let's call that line. You state your main point. State your main point, and then sinker. Hook, line, and sinker. You preview your points. And we use hook, line, and sinker because it's memorable. So hook, line, and sinker. You gain attention and create a need to listen. You give them your main point, and you preview your points. Usually, you would also read the whole passage in there somewhere. I broke that rule yesterday because reading the whole passage took 10 minutes, and I thought you guys would all space out in that time. That was a long text. So there can be reasons not to, but usually you will read your text somewhere in here. In our body, we go through our content. We're going to come back to that because that's the outline, and that's what we're going to spend the majority of our time on. What are we trying to do in our conclusion?
Summarize.
I like the word summarize. Yeah. We're wrapping up and ramping up. Yeah. We need to reiterate the main things, for sure. And we want to heighten our application at this point. I would encourage you not to wait to apply at this point. Like, your application should be hinted at in your creating a need to listen right up front. Like, you don't wait, and then you weave it throughout. But at the end, you're going to restate the main things, probably your outline. You don't always have to restate your outline. Definitely restate your main point. And you're going to do everything you can to heighten that application and move people towards how that main point connects with their lives. Okay, so let's write those. You're going to restate your main point, and you're going to heighten application. Okay, here's two things. Here's one thing you're not going to do in your conclusion. you were not going to say anything new. Nothing new. When I do my like 2-hour dump, I always end up with new stuff in my conclusion, always. And then I have to like discipline myself to either cut it or get it moved up. Nothing new in your conclusion. If you're feeling this strong urge to add something new in your conclusion, it means you haven't fully developed your argument before and you need to get it up. And here's something that you don't have to do in your intro. You do not have to talk about context in your intro. Usually, you want to wield context in the place where it fits most naturally and pushes forward your argument the best. So don't feel like you have to start every text by being like, and this is where they were in the few chapters before. You don't have to do that. Not unless it is absolutely necessary to make the point of your passage. Okay? So we'll just put that as you don't have to do context here. All right. Any questions about introductions and conclusions before we spend the bulk of our time on outlines? Yeah.
As a listener, I'm curious why, what's the reason like teachers will start with like explaining the outline, like we're gonna go here, 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 here.
Oh.
Like just what's the rationale behind
that? Yeah. That is such a great question. Thank you for asking that. So people are super relieved up front to know where you're going so that they're not sitting there wondering if you have 6 points and how long is this person gonna drone on. Like, if you tell them where they're going, they can wrap their minds around it and stay with you. If you don't tell them, you'll lose them because they're just afraid you're gonna keep going. And it creates an incredible sense of relief for you to follow through on what you said you were gonna do. So it just helps keep people with you. That's just one of those practical things we learn from how modern speech works. Yeah, any other questions? All right, let's talk about strategies for making those outlines for answering number 7. Okay, outline strategies. You should all write these down, because we're going to do an exercise where you're going to need to have these written down. So even if you're not a note taker, please do these. Okay. The first one is you want to reflect the structure of the text. Now, in most cases, that will mean your verse breaks and your order will be the same from your structure to your teaching outline. In most cases, that means your verse breaks and your sections will be the same from your structure work to your teaching outline. But there are good reasons to not do that, and one of them that's significant in Old Testament history is when you do a plot arc, because that leaves you with 5 sections, and that's just a lot for anyone to remember, and so usually you're gonna wanna get that down. You're gonna maybe wanna use a different structure strategy and see if you can break it into bigger groups, but however you change from your structure to your outline needs to be to serve the point of the text. Okay? Does that make sense? Because you are still reflecting the structure of the text in your outline, even if you're breaking from your structure. You want your points, this is a different strategy, you want your points to relate to your main point. Whoops. It should all work together. It's an arrow. The shaft of the arrow. If you just tried to shoot an arrowhead, it would just go bloop onto the ground. The shaft is relating to the main point. It's driving it forward, so they need to relate. The next one is to use today's language. The next is to be audience focused. To me, those two are a touch overlapping. You should always ask yourself, does my audience know all these words? And does my audience care about all these words? Should be today's language audience focused. And finally, your points should build. What do I mean by that? Well, I think this is one of those areas where this might become a little specific to the genre. So I'm thinking of narrative here, or text type narrative here. You might use your points in narrative to build tension if you're teaching a plot arc where there's building tension. So you might build tension. You might just create a sense of movement. Or you might be stacking up reasons to believe the main point. Any questions on strategies? All right, Coco, do you have something you need? Okay, great. Then we will head to our small groups and be there by 9:45.